kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. A lot of people here today. Cole Martin, you are here. How are you doing?
I am here. I'm fine. How are you?
I am also here. Also here. Scotty Cafornaforge Smith. Scott, how you doing?
How's it going? Pretty good.
Cafornaforge.
Ready for the puns.
Oh, God. It's going to be so bad, isn't it?
Brace yourselves.
Ready to interrupt Eternal,
ready for the puns.
Let's just hang out. If you can push the button now,
that's all I'm here for.
You don't even need to know that you did it. Just let the show go. He didn't think he's participating the whole time.
That would be funny if I did just mute him and go on with the show, and he's just talking the whole time, making jokes and puns, and no one hears him. That'd be amazing. But we aren't the only ones here, because we are also being joined from Dreammoji, Sheng Ding. How are you doing today?
It couldn't be better. I'm in Shanghai now, and it's 11 a.m. in the morning. And yesterday I published a game on Xbox One. It's very exciting.
So tell us about this game. You were here to talk about the game Little Triangle. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What is Little Triangle?
Little Triangle, well, for people outside of China, many think the triangles in the game are the naturals. So there are different kind of naturals. So you control the naturals and you'll have fun like the old times when you were in the 90s. So I received a review earlier this morning, and it says that after Nintendo's Super Mario Bros., Little Triangle is the first game he wanted to finish flawlessly.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That is high praise to be thrown up there next to Mario.
Yeah, and we're going to ship on the Nintendo's Switch maybe around a month later.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we'll compete with Super Mario Bros. Directly.
Oh, you could take him.
Yeah. Of course.
Who's this Mario guy? Who ever heard of him? What is he, a plumber or something? Sounds Italian.
Yeah, I'll do some research and check it out.
So what kind of...
I'm on Team Nacho.
Nachos sound good. That's all I heard.
Yeah, I'm on Team Nacho.
did everyone eat? Are there hungry people in the show tonight who are just going to talk about food the whole time? Or are we good?
I'm fat. I'm always hungry. So we're screwed from the start with me here.
Sheng, did you send us some nachos overseas?
Well, maybe in China, actually, there are other food in the triangular shape. So like rice dumpling. In China, many people just call it a rice dumpling, like the adventure of the rice dumpling. But outside of China, I think most people, particularly English-speaking people, will call it Doritos or nachos.
Oh, yeah. It kind of, now that I think of it, it kind of looks like shrimp toast when I order it from the Chinese food restaurant. Shrimp toast triangles. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never had shrimp toast. I don't know what that is.
Damn. Maybe it's an East Coast. Well, you're in the East Coast as well.
Yes, I am East Coast. Strange. Thank you for remembering. I don't know. I've never been big into like Chinese food, so maybe that's the reason why. My triangle food of choice is pizza.
Oh yeah, pizza. Yeah, also very popular pizza or a piece of cake.
Oh man, now I'm gonna be hungry for cake. So what other food could we talk about? you're here to talk about a game. But fuck it, we're going to talk about food instead. What kind of good food have you had today?
Watermelon is very healthy, right?
Pumpkin. There's a pumpkin in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Adventure, right. That's right. Didn't you work on that other game, Mr. Pumpkin Adventure? Or
Yeah, as for Pumpkin, it's actually the first made in China game on PS4. And I also brought the game to a lot of other TV platforms in China. So in China, there are some platforms that that use cloud computing. So you stream the game to your TV from the net. So a lot of players know Mr. Pumpkin in China as well, much more famous than that outside of China.
Ah.
That's pretty neat. I didn't know that it was like that over in China. Weren't there bans on consoles for the longest time over there?
Yeah. So Xbox One become legal in the end of September 2014. So the history of console in China is only like a bit more than 3 years. And PS4 arrived in China, I think it's about the end of 2014. So even shorter than Xbox One. So do you guys play more PS4 or Xbox One?
Oh, Xbox.
Yeah, sure. We're Xbox fans. We love our Xboxes on SML. So
To be fair, I don't own a PS4, but if I did, you know, I might. It's not like I'm hating against Sony or anything, but, you know, just play Xbox in general.
I see.
No, he's totally hating. Don't go with him.
I'm an Xbox fanboy. Let it be known. No.
I like how neither of you two own PS4s, and I do, but I'm the one who actually hates the PS4.
Wow.
I own it. It's probably because I'm on my seventh, but I own PS4.
Well, actually, the game is available in PS4 Asia, but I don't own a PS4.
I'm really the only person on the show right now who owns a PS4, and you made a game for the PS4.
You made a game, and they didn't send you a PS4. What heresy!
Yeah, I think the bigger market is in Xbox for Little Triangle, and it's easier for me to publish because I'm more familiar with Xbox One. Actually, a few years ago, I was a technical evangelist in Microsoft, working on Windows games. So for Windows Store, so the technology and the process is quite similar to the process for Xbox One, like the ID at Xbox program. So with Xbox Play Anywhere, the technology is actually quite similar to a few years ago when I worked on Windows Store. So that's why Little Triangle is a Xbox Play Anywhere game.
And you said this is the first Play Anywhere game from China, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
How did you go about getting in the Play Anywhere program? Like, how is that something that Microsoft comes to you about? It's like, hey, do you want to put this game on Windows 10 and be part of the Play Anywhere program? Or do you go to them and say, hey, how do I become a part of this?
Actually, the opportunity is for everyone. Actually, Microsoft recommend every developer to develop a game as a Xbox Play Anywhere title, and usually more resources will be available for XPA games. So Microsoft has been doing this recommendation for developers about 2 or 3 years ago, but the adoption rate is very low. And we think that maybe we can get it done because, you know, we have confidence in our technology research. So it's Microsoft recommended and we adopted it. Yeah,
that's pretty neat. I love the Play Anywhere program. I think anything that allows people to get a game, buy it once, and get it on multiple platforms is a genius way to do it.
Yeah, it's great for the consumer, definitely, because you don't have to buy it twice. So, awesome.
Yes, in the future, it will even be available for HoloLens, maybe 1 or 2 years later. Yeah.
That brings me to, go ahead.
It's because the package is totally the same. It's the same package. So so when we do the packaging to submit it to the store, so earlier, about like a year ago, you have to use two packages, one for the PC version of Microsoft Store and the other for the Xbox. So two packages, but now you can use only one package. It's very, very convenient. Yeah.
Ah, I was actually going to say, what about Windows 10 mixed reality? That's kind of like the HoloLens direction, right? VR, mixed reality, yeah. All that stuff. Are you getting into any of that the mixed reality stuff?
Yeah, we thought about it I think a half a year ago, because Microsoft actually sent us a survey about whether we'd like to develop some games of MR, but you know, the market is very small at the moment.
That's true.
Unless we get some like big investment, otherwise we may not be able to develop for MR games at the moment.
Yeah, I really hope it grows and gets more popular, because I bought a mixed reality headset, and they are pretty awesome. Just it's not that many games yet. That is that's the thing.
For the people who don't know, myself included, what is the difference between virtual reality and mixed reality?
You probably know more about it
because
than I do.
My only experience with any kind of VR stuff is PlayStation VR. That's the only thing I have. I've never done anything with Vive. I've never done anything with Oculus. I've never done any of the shitty cell phone and Google Cardboard thing. So I don't know what the big difference is between virtual reality and mixed reality. Karna, you have honestly, a mixed reality set. So what is it?
It's the only one that I played. I haven't played other VR stuff. Well, aside from the horrible Nintendo Virtual Boy from like years ago, if you can
count. Don't
you
say that's horrible. Count? I'll cut you.
Red and Black? You want to see Red and Black all
day? Goddamn, dude, I miss my Virtual Boy so much. I really do. I had one. It came. Oh, I had like the hard plastic case that you could. Man, I miss that thing. I loved it.
Really, but yeah, I haven't played any other VR stuff, so I can't really tell what the difference is with mixed reality. The only thing I honestly think, I think Microsoft's just trying to take their own word and stick their own brand, so to speak. They're like, oh, we have mixed reality. We have something different, better, or so to speak. I'm not sure. I don't know if there's actually any differences or not.
Dark Mika is saying mixed uses the world around you. VR is completely made up worlds. Is HoloLens technically mixed reality then?
No, I think it's supposed to be straight up virtual reality.
I don't know this shit. Yeah. How would Little Triangle play in virtual reality? How would you go about bringing Little Triangle to VR or MR or HoloLens? Like, what would you do with that?
Like for HoloLens, so for HoloLens, you don't need a TV to play a TV game. So like you can hang this game on a wall, on the wall of your room, so that you can lie on your bed and use a controller and bring your HoloLens on, and it's very, very relaxing to play a game.
Yeah. But not when you're actually playing the levels and dying in the lava, right?
I have never died in lava. What is your problem?
You're a liar.
The game without dying.
If you're going to tell us you haven't died in the lava in Little Triangle, I'm calling bullshit.
I mean, as soon as I see I'm falling toward it, I just press start and hit restart. So. I have not technically died in the lava.
Cheater. No. Cheater. Cheater.
Hey, while we're on the subject.
I want that no death achievement.
While we're talking about lava, I guess I'll bring a little, I'm not even the developer. Sheng should probably say it, but I got the achievement today that where you jump on the surface of lava, but it seemed to only work on hardcore mode, which was strange. It didn't work for me in casual, Sheng.
Yeah, that's for that. Ready?
Yeah, I actually tried it in casual. It didn't unlock, but then I just loaded hardcore mode and died right away. I guess it was just like, oh, you died. All right, here's your achievement.
are you giving the achievement pro tips on the show, Carnage?
Yes. You know, the achievement whore has to speak. So I've given all that I know, and I'm sure Sheng will have more, you know, better achievement tips and stuff.
Yeah, I believe there will be guidance shortly later outside of China. But in China, there are some nice guys, players who are huge fan of Little Triangle, and they create some guidance, like a speedrun and all the hidden things and all achievements.
Oh yeah, that's right. He actually linked me to them. You mind if I copy and paste them into the chat if you like?
Sure, of course, no problem.
All right, cool. I'll do that here for you guys in the Mixer chat.
The game was early accessed in China. It was earlier region locked to be available only in China and only with single player mode. So because we're not that confident about the quality of the game, so we did some. Quite a lot of tests in China, and we got a lot of feedback. So it was polished for like more than 2 years. So actually, I think in the middle of 2016, we already had almost 3 chapters of single player mode. But we since then we have not added quite a lot of new levels, but we developed a multiplayer mode. But have you tried the battle mode?
I've actually not got a chance to try that one yet. How about you, Joe?
I have not, because I don't have anyone to play with except cats, and they don't know how to use controllers. They are so worthless.
Eternal?
I loaded it up, but my kids had homework, and I couldn't get them to play with me.
I see.
She was like, I gotta do homework.
Damn it, kids, stop doing fucking your homework teenagers. And play some video games with me. But mom, I have college to prepare for. Fuck college, come play a video game.
She just wants to be a video game developer. It should have just been considered independent study.
So tell what is the battle mode in the game, because the single player is kind of your standard 2D action platformer. What is the battle mode in the game, though?
Well, for the battle mode, well, on Xbox, there's also a game called the Towerfall. Have you heard of it?
Oh, is it a Towerfall Ascension?
Yeah, Towerfall Ascension, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a pretty cool game.
Yeah, for Towerfall Ascension, so you use your arrows to and use your jumping skill to attack your opponents. Mm-hmm. But in Little Triangle, there are actually many more weapons, like rifles, like different kinds of guns and bombs and axes. So you can use them to attack, and also you can use your jumping technique, the double jump. It's the same as the single player mode, to jump onto opponent's head and to attack. Yeah, so it's also very fun to play in the battle mode, actually. However, unfortunately, we haven't got a chance to look at the online multiplayer content. So it's a pity, but if Little Triangle goes well on Xbox, we will have more fun to do the development. Yeah.
It's always cool to see, you know, a possible update later on, depending on how, like you said, mm-hmm. how the game does. Hopefully it does, you know, really well, so you guys can implement the online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool to see. I know online development isn't the easiest thing out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we thought about it, but it could take us about a year to finish the work.
Oh wow.
Because so that will be a long time of delay, because we have already worked on this mm-hmm. for more than 2 years. That's about 28 months. So the developer is it's kind of literally is kind of sick of developing.
Yeah, no, it's good you guys got the game out, at least, you know, so that everyone can play the game and then you can update it later on. That's the great thing. I know that you guys work closely with ID at Xbox and they seem to be really good about updates and stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think maybe we'll use some DLC in the future, maybe add a little bit more content as well as online mode, so that we can use a bundle to make it available. Of course, those will DLC will be free.
Oh, as nice. An update.
Yeah.
And you can't forget something else that you got to add for Carnage. They all know crates. What it's going to be. Achievements, extra new achievements.
Oh, not yeah. real.
I thought we were going with loot crates.
Loot crates.
Yeah. you open, you buy the loot crates, and inside the loot crates are just 1-point achievements.
No, inside yeah. the loot crates are Doritos. How awesome would that be?
Oh, God.
At that point, we should just make them 0-point achievements just to piss off negative. If you still the, get them for the completion.
Shang, not only can your game be the first one China Play Anywhere title, but maybe you can have the first game that will have negative gamer score achievements to make people hate on me.
Oh, that would be negative, hilarious. Is that even...
just kidding.
Is that even technically possible to have negative achievement values? Because that would be amazing.
I feel like it's probably not possible, but it should
that's
be.
Not possible.
That
it's
would
not
possible. Piss so many people off, and I would love it. I don't know why.
It's like, oh, you bought a loot crate minus 5G.
Like cheater pops up. Yeah. Like took the easy way out. Negative 7 points.
I should always be an odd number too.
Oh, God. I love odd numbered achievements. I love them. Every time a game comes out with like an achievement that's 33, I'm like, yes, I will buy this game. I will love this game again because that stuff pisses off so many people. It makes me happy. Yeah. I'm such a dick about it, but people are too, oh, my achievement, my gamer score doesn't end in a 0 or a 5. Well, then complete the game that threw your numbers off. I mean, shit. If you're so concerned about ending in a 0 or a 5, that when you play a game that gives you a 6, you'll get the 4 as well.
Yeah.
Unless you're a quitter.
I'm a quitter. Mine's been on 8 for like forever, and I'm just like, okay.
I love it. I love it. I love having a weird gamer score.
Yeah,
I'm
maybe
about to break 170,000.
Yeah, maybe in the DLC we can put a list of achievements with a gamer score 1, 2, 3.
Yes. Yes. Do it. Oh, man. That would be incredible.
Cringing. You can't see it, but you can hear it.
Any type of achievements are fine for me, though, for real. I don't mind.
Yeah, one day's for 1 gamer score. Yeah.
Beat the game without dying for 1 gamer score, like in 1 run, in a speed run in under 2 hours. No.
Oh my lord, you can have a speed run mode in the game and you get 99 gamer score for starting it and then 1 gamer score for completing.
Don't give them any more ideas. No, just kidding.
There was a game like that not too long ago, maybe about a year and a half or so ago, and you got 99 for starting it and 1 for finishing it, and I never got the 1.
I know Double Dragon Neon was kind of like that, where I think the achievement description was like, well, guess you have to beat it now.
Yeah, but for real, like all achievements, more extra achievements in games when you're, you know, putting in DLC, it does definitely help some people that are just achievement whores like us. Because they'll really be like, oh, you know what? I don't know if I want to buy that DLC or play the DLC. Or even, like you said, it's going to be a free DLC, which is even more enticing. So people will just be like, oh, new achievements. Let me try this game, download the new update, you know, try it out again or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that actually brings me to another question. I know, Shang, we were talking about this a little bit in the Discord. You know, I was mentioning that the mechanics for the jumping seem a little bit weird. And you were saying that there's some inertia. You want to go into detail about that?
Yeah, sure. So about the inertia, actually, a lot of players complained about it earlier in China. About 2 years ago, 2 years ago, the game had no inertia at all. But in China, you know, many players, they are not very proficient in controllers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, console was not popular in China. And even today, I think for PS4, there are about 2 million. And for Xbox One, there are less than that in China. So not many players know how to use a controller. That's a problem. So without inertia for many new gamers, they find it even more difficult because, you know,
really?
Because when they go back, when they go back, they can easily go too much because, you know, Little Triangle is moving very fast. Right. So when they want to control accurately, without inertia, they find it more difficult. Because when they change the direction, the movement is more than they thought. So that's a problem for them. So that's why we adjusted and added the inertia. But the physical engine of the game mm-hmm. engine is Unity 3D, and the physical engine is for many good players who use controllers a lot, and they do not like Unity engine's physical engine for mm-hmm. About the inertia. So that's the problem. But you know, we have adjusted for quite a lot of times according to Chinese players' feedbacks. So we're kind of, you know, we're choosing the inertia with the parameters that Chinese players complain mm-hmm. the least. So now we cannot change it anymore because, you know, many players are already getting used to it. But I was thinking about adding a new mode, I mean, a control mode for players to choose so that they can choose to play without the inertia. For me, I think that's good. I like mm-hmm. that. I like the mode without the inertia, actually. But, you know, the programmer is on vacation. And,
Chinese New Year is coming up.
So it's a long vacation, about 3 weeks, and I think he really need a good needs relaxation.
A break. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yes, yeah, it's been 2 years he has been working on this. You know, mm-hmm. For a 2D game, if you check other games development. History, you can find that maybe some games are developed by only one or two persons, or for some games they only take like half a year at most around a year. But for us, you know, there are actually so much content, single player mode, couch co-op, and couch battle. So that's really a lot of content, and for every mode, it's fun to play. So it took us too long. And according to a theory, usually if you focus on a project for like 8 months, you can get sick of it. But we are already more than 3 times of that. So,
wow.
So that's why we need a break, right?
That's true. But,
so after 8 months, you're sick of it. After 2 years, you're really fucking sick of it.
I myself have played the game for like so many times that I've stopped counting like 2 years ago. And so 2 years ago, I had already died like more than 20,000 times.
Jeez.
Like,
oh my goodness. 20,000.
That's a lot of jumping.
At least that many times.
Holy crap.
Earlier, we tested in China Joy, and we put a counter there on the TV. Actually, in a single day, players could die more than 3,000 times.
Wow.
In a day. Yeah. we just put the console there, you know, from the morning to the night. You know, in the night there's a party there, so players continue to play. So for a single day, they can die for more than 3,000 times. So for me, you know, I play every day. Yeah.
What a great opportunity for a pun, for a bad pun from me, and a great idea to change the name of your game to Little Die Angle. Yes, I went there, Joe.
I hate you, Scott. I hate you.
Would you guys like a Carnage? We can put him in a box and ship him to China, and y'all can have him. Like, we don't even want him back.
just
make
him.
Sure you put some Doritos in that box when I'm shipped.
Doritos? Loot we're not box. Even going to put air holes in it. Fuck that.
You're getting those new Lady Doritos, and you just have to deal with it.
But yeah, for real, an option for that jumping inertia thing, that would be cool if it's possible to like make it so that you can have both, you know, jumping game engines, just switch alternate between them whenever anyone wants.
Yeah,
I was gonna say going back to the jumping thing, I'm curious to know, is there any kind of difference in the inertia aspect between using the analog stick in the D-pad? Because as weird as it sounds, when I would try a lot of precision jumps with the analog stick, I would always overshoot the jumps. When I would use the D-pad, I was nailing them.
Really? Oh, I haven't tried the D-pad yet. That's a good point. I'm actually loading up the game right now.
So is there a difference in how the physics work between the two, or is it just when you're using the analog stick, you're moving more than you normally would given the analog and... you know, the time it takes to release the analog stick compared to a digital button?
Yeah, I personally like D-pad more because D-pad is more quick when you try to change the direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so either way, I died a shitload. So it's not that it made me super better at the game. It felt more precise, but I got to agree with Carnage. The jumping does feel just a little weird in the game. I don't know how to put it. I think I was telling Carnage that it felt too precise when I was jumping up and not as precise on the way down. It wasn't something that ruined the game for me. It just felt weird, and it's something I had to get used to.
Right.
Yeah, it's really weird. I think it's weird for many. It's because, you know, we got too many feedback. You know, in China, we had 60,000 players who had played the game. So those players, they gave us feedback every day. And then when there are always some players who complain about controlling, you know, so the programmer adjusted quite often, you know, here and there, and eventually the controls become a little bit weird. But for me, I have no feels now, you know. I feel just okay.
You're used to the inertia, right? Maybe it's like overseas. It's like in China, it's like everyone is used to the inertia in a lot of like Chinese games, but over here we're more used to without inertia. Maybe that's what it is.
I think there's still some, like, a small percentage of players in China who complains about the inertia. Seriously, I complained this too to the programmer. Uh-huh. You know, it's an indie team. You know, everybody's opinion is very important. So I always negotiate with them, like, you know, maybe we can do a little bit change here and there, you know. Mm-hmm. I also have a lot of feedback, so, you know, most of the times they are rejected. So about the inertia, so it's also one of the suggestions that got rejected, you know. So so after the Chinese Spring Festival, you know, I'll talk with them again and try to add a mode.
That's awesome. I mean,
the funny thing about the inertia, Scott, mm-hmm. you're just going to have to calm your tongue.
can't wait to interrupt you. No, go ahead.
The funny thing about the inertia thing is that, you know, where Joe and Scott keep complaining, oh, it threw me off somewhere or another. I was actually perfectly okay with it. And normally, I struggle like hell in platformers. I'm all over the place. Did I have rheumatoid arthritis, and my hands are just like, no, you're not going to do this today. For some reason, though, I found Little Triangle a lot easier. And I was just blowing through it. Like, yeah, this is amazing.
And it wasn't even a walking sim, Eternal.
It wasn't a walking sim, and it wasn't a point and click. And I was like, yeah, I can do this for a change. So I don't know.
I think we're learning that Cole Martin is a name of Chinese descent now.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
I'm a Chinese redneck. I'm sorry. I've been hiding my secret this whole time.
Yeah. I think I can hear your accent.
It's there. I mean, you might notice it every now and then. It creeps in, particularly when you say something like lot or triangle.
Oh, Lord.
It was called Little Triangle.
Little Triangle.
No, but it is a super fun game from what I play. I beat World 1 and raged a little bit on the boss, but, you know, had a good time so far. I know it's going to get more challenging, but
that's the easiest boss fight I've played in months. I was like, fuck yeah!
Well, after watching Shiz play it, actually, he raged more than I did.
I know, I was so worried, too, because, like, I heard Shiz playing it last night. I wasn't watching a stream, I was playing something else, but I could hear him in the background, and I thought, oh, I'm going to get fucked when I play that game.
But he always rages, so don't worry, Shang. Remember, Shang was...
Yeah, I watched it a little bit. Yeah. I watched it a little bit yesterday. And yeah, he's like some other players in China who complain about the controls. But it's okay, you know, we have heard a lot of it, so we're okay.
That's where you just take those suggestions and immediately file them in the shredder folder.
Yeah,
just put it in the paper shredder and let it go.
So, yeah, what did you think of Shiz's playing the game? Do you think he did all right? Do you think that there's some tips that he could use to improve, or do you think he's just helpless at this point?
Yeah, I think Shiz is playing is okay. But he really complains a lot. You know, he's one of those players that complained the most.
I mean, that is what he does.
So polite about it. We're just like, he's fucking awful
in games. So he kind of does it for entertainment too. I think he has a little bit of you know,
the Shiz rage.
Shizazz.
Yeah, it's totally okay. We have seen a lot like that in China. Yeah. And she's like to find those hidden stuff.
The hidden areas. There's a lot in those levels.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying too. Like, I was going through going, oh, I'm gonna find that. I will find the entry to that fucker some way, somehow.
There really are an absurd number of hidden areas in this. Like, there, I feel like I am hugging every single wall, checking absolutely everywhere, and I'll still end the stage missing one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get to the end and I'd see like the little ship that you get on, and I'd look up in the corner and it'd be like one or two missing. I was like, nope, I'd go back through the whole fucking thing all over again, mm-hmm. backward.
Have you guys found the hidden arcade level or whatever yet? That was a little
in World challenging. One?
Yeah, the first one. There's like one in each world, I think, Shang, right? Hidden arcade level or something.
Yeah, so for each chapter, there is a hidden arcade.
Yeah.
So and for every arcade, the map in the arcade is randomly generated. So every time you get into the arcade, you can see a different map. I think our arcade game is well designed compared to some other platformer games. You know, so for some other platformer games, maybe they put some hidden stuff that they are not satisfied as a hidden level. But for us, I think those hidden levels are also very fun to play.
Yeah, I beat the first one. It took me a little while, but it's pretty fun. Challenging extra type of bonus or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. A lot of secrets, a lot of hidden areas. Yeah. It's ridiculous how much stuff is in the game. It really is.
Yeah, so I think 2 days ago, I also saw another review that says that even with only single player mode, the game is still decent with the price. So I really hope that in the future we can add some online multiplayer so that, you know, more players will play those multiplayer content. I saw quite a few videos and reviews, and they all focus on the single player mode.
Interesting. Like, maybe it's because I don't think there were that many, or if any, correct me if I'm wrong, but are there multiplayer achievements, like battle achievements?
Oh, no achievements in the multiplayer mode. All the achievements.
And that is why Scott will never play the multiplayer.
Add those multiplayer achievements and I'll be all over it now. But, you know, I probably will try it out anyway, just for the hell of it. But, yeah.
Oh, man. So it's been out, what, a day or two now? What kind of feedback have you gotten from the American audience so far?
I think generally the feedback is positive. But there are also some negative feedbacks. So mainly about one is the controls. One of the other is that they want more kinds of music. So only two negative feedbacks. So for those we can consider to update in the after the Spring Festival. And for other comments, mostly are very positive. First, it's a game for gamers. You know, it's well designed. It's designed for players to have fun. So, so generally, I think very positive. And I think the ID at Xbox team, they love the game very much.
You know, they streamed it the other day. I remember.
Yeah, they streamed it, and I think it's one of the most happiest streaming that did ever. They laughed really a lot. They got exhausted after they did the stream, because they laughed, literally laughed for about an hour. So that's really exhausting.
And how many times did they die?
they're using the casual mode, so they're making good progress, and they stopped at the first level of chapter 2, and then they spend about 20 minutes in the battle mode. So if you have some time, you can check the multiplayer mode later. Actually, they played in their channel. They played both of the two multiplayer mode, and they had really a good time playing the local multiplayer content.
Yeah.
Cool. It's good to hear people are having fun with it. Last question I got is, this is Dreamoji's first game brought to America, published in America, correct?
Yes, for Dreamoji, yes. Actually, I know all the developers for quite a while, and I worked in other bigger companies in China, and so their studio is there for a few years, so I cannot join them, but so I started a company to work closely with them. Like, I just live nearby their studio, so we literally actually work together to get the game published. And I join in almost all kinds of work to work with them together. So, and this will be the first game from Dreamoji. Actually, I also signed a contract with Tencent to get some games from Tencent to get published on Xbox as well. And I have been working in China in Shanghai for more than 10 years, and I have connections with people from different kinds of work. Yeah, so so I just talk to them. You know, they trust me. They are let me publish. So
that's awesome.
When the ID team heard that I was going to publish a game from Tencent, they got what Tencent, why didn't Tencent publish it itself? Why Tencent need a publisher to publish a game? That's a weird thing, right? So it's actually a indie game from Tencent, like three girls from Tencent that they put aside their work on bigger project and then started a smaller project. And I think it's fun. It's also a platformer.
I was actually just going to ask if you were working on bringing more games over to the States, but I guess that answers it, huh?
Cool.
Yeah, I hope that Little Triangle goes well. You know, although there's some placement on the dashboard, but still there's no data coming. So I may still need another 2 days to check the data. And if the data is well, I will certainly stay in the industry for much longer.
I certainly hope so, it does well for you. I know I'm having a lot of fun with the game.
Me too, definitely.
Yeah,
I really hope the best for you, because that's cool to hear about that Tencent stuff as well. I mean, it's like a sub team kind of like from Tencent. It's like a little indie subgroup or something.
Tencent's organization changes a lot, and it's a group with like. They have a group of about 40 people working on smaller games. They just brainstorm and do the games they want to do. And usually those games, you know, they cannot cover the cost of Tencent's human cost. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. You know, Tencent does not care at all.
Yeah.
So,
they're doing well.
So
that's cool, though.
Yeah, Tencent, they are trying to build their reputation about making games that are fun to play. You know, Tencent made a lot of money by free-to-play games in China.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so players can spend like hundreds of dollars, like even thousands of dollars in a free-to-play game. And that had make Tencent infamous so they want to help, you know, build their new reputation by doing some Steam games or, you know, premium PC games or premium indie games like those.
Okay, cool.
That sounds pretty awesome. Cole, Scott, did either of you have any other questions to ask? I know we've had you on for a while and I don't want to take up all of your day.
I mean, I also wanted to mention the art style. I know it's very colorful.
That's
and
what I was
awesome.
Going to bring up with the art style.
Yeah, definitely like adds to the fun, you know, style of it or whatever.
Yeah. So. It's pretty fun, It's
like the very first thing I thought when I saw the art style, before I'd even seen any of the characters, was like, that looks very much like Mr. Pumpkin Adventures.
And I noticed when Shiz was streaming, I didn't even know this, that Mr. Pumpkin is apparently in the game, right?
Chen? He is
one of the unlockable skins or...
Yeah, that's a Easter egg. We put it there.
Oh, snap. Spoiler alert.
I was so tickled. I was like, oh my gosh.
I just told everyone sue me.
I was one of those, like, everybody else was like, this game is so weird. I'm going, that's what makes it perfect. This has, like, really odd stuff. And so I was just, and to see it, a character that I recognized in another game and the art style carrying over, I was just like, this is an instant love.
Yeah,
I was very happy.
The artist actually is learned something related to electricity in the college, but he loved painting a lot, so he painted different things, and he also painted on computer for like more than 20 years. So that's why his style is very unique, because he had never learned from a teacher.
Oh, wow.
So he learned it himself. Yeah, only because of love. So, so the artist is very unique in the industry. No one else had his experience. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen any other game that with that type of art style. I mean, of course, a lot of other indie games, like, of course, Cuphead and other stuff, have their own unique ones, but yours definitely has its own touch.
Yeah, with
it's
personality.
Certainly one you recognize. As soon as you see it, you put together the universe.
Yes.
Indeed. Well, again, Sheng, I know we've had you on for quite a while now. Was there anything that you wanted to bring up that we didn't get to ask you?
Yeah, no, for the moment. I think it's good to hang out with you. Yeah, it's very fun.
It was great having you on. I know we originally kicked around the idea of you coming on for like 20, 30 minutes, and now we're almost at an hour. So.
It's very fast to
you have fallen into the SML trap where people think that they're going to come on for 10 minutes
on
and we talk
about stuff, but no, we bullshit and we go on and on and on and on until Carnage runs out of puns and
then we just hang up on him.
Thanks for having me.
It was great having you on. Again, the game is called Little Triangle. It is available now on Xbox One. How much is it? Where can we get it? Digital, right?
Yeah, $14.99 digitally. Xbox Play Anywhere,
Awesome.
Put the link in the chat again, xbox.com. There you go.
Carnage on the ball.
Yeah, thanks, Scott, for the link.
No problem,
Yeah, I have to hang up. It's lunch time now.
Yeah.
Time for Doritos.
time to have some Doritos. Yeah,
Doritos and rice dumplings, right?
Yeah.
That'd be a
great chat with you next time. See you.
Great chat. Thanks.
Have a great day, Sheng.
Thank you for hanging out with
us. You too. Thank you. See you. Bye-bye.
All right. Good stuff. Scott, are you sticking around while we do the rest of this shit, or do you have to run?
I probably got to get going in a little bit, so I'm going to get going as well and, not interrupt internal in any of her reviews.
I was going to say, I don't have too much news if you want to dick around for that at least.
Sure, let's do some news and then
I only have like three things to go through, and then Henry Jones in our Twitch chat had a question for us.
Sure,
The three bits I have, first off, one new backward compatible game this week, but it's a biggin'. Splinter Cell Conviction, now playable on Xbox One. That is fucking cool.
I beat that game.
I refuse to believe it. You have one achievement and nothing else. That's all there is to it.
Achievement. Yeah, I know. Shame. But yeah.
I'm excited for it. Fuck yeah, Splinter Cell. Bring him on. That's what I think.
Splinter Cell was before I was in my whole I can play shooter space. Like, I took a spell where I thought all I was capable to play of was like Uno, and I couldn't handle the controller or play anything else. And then I started playing shooters because my husband would send me out to die in Halo and tell him where I got shot from. And then one day I got pissed off and shot back. And that's how I got started playing Xbox. And but Splinter Cell and all that, like, came out before I kind of got into that phase. And I look back at it now and I think, I really want to fucking play those. Because they were so cool. But I was such a bitch and was like, I can't play that. I don't know how to use a gun. Because I was a dumb.
Well, I think Conviction's on sale this week, isn't it?
That's even better.
I like that last week, three games were added to backward compatibility. All three of them were on sale. This week, Splinter Cell's added, and it's on. I wish they would do this every week. Whatever games get added, put them on sale.
That would make sense.
And, get people's attention.
Did you hear about the games that got delisted? I don't know if that was something that you were going to talk about in the news as well.
No, I didn't know some games got delisted. What's up?
Yeah, I'm looking on here on True Achievements and Blacklight Tango Down, some arcade games on 360, Blacklight Tango Down, Mercury HG, Quarrel, and Swarm, and then some games on demand, Burnout Paradise, which kind of makes me wonder because there's a rumor of a Burnout Paradise remastered.
Yeah, that
so maybe so maybe they delisted it like, oh, quick, get rid of it so people could buy it again for the new version. But let's see, Deadly Premonition. I know, I think you like that one, right?
Yeah.
Joe? El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron.
Oh, that's I loved El Shaddai.
Then this one I knew was coming at some point. Forza Horizon 2 presents Fast and Furious 360 because licensing. And Zone of the Enders HD Collection. There's a couple There's two more actually Xbox One games that were delisted even. Clash,
Forza Horizon 2, Fast and Furious, and Clash. That's weird that Clash is gone.
Yeah, that was a fun little brawler, local multiplayer brawler.
I wonder if it was just too easy to get the completion, so they're like, you know, get rid of it.
And it says here in better news, if you missed out on the two XBLA games, these two, Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams and Thunder Wolves on 360, those are actually back on the marketplace. I didn't even know they were delisted at some point, but cool. I mean, Gianna Sisters is on Xbox One as well, but...
I liked Quarrel.
It's a word game. Of course you fucking loved it.
I know.
I loved it too.
It was cool. Blacklight Tango Down I actually really enjoyed and played like the hell out of when it was new. But now the game has been dead for a long time because, you know, it was an indie arcade shooter. Those are all always die quick. And what was this? Mercury HD was pretty good. It wasn't any Marvel Blast, but it was close.
Oh, and then Dodonpachi Resurrection in Europe is gone as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That is interesting. Very interesting. Now, the other news that I have is just more Ubisoft news, where South Park The Stick of Truth is finally getting its own standalone re-release on Xbox and PS4. You might remember that if you pre-ordered The Fractured But Whole, you got a re-release of The Stick of Truth, and now they're finally going to sell that separately next Tuesday for $20. So if you didn't pre-order it, now you can pick it up by itself, which is nifty. So I love Stick of Truth, so the more people who could pick up the re-release, remaster, whatever, the better, I think. And last bit of news I have is that the season pass details for Far Cry 5 were revealed, and it will include three additional playable scenarios, including Hour of Darkness, which takes you back to the Vietnam War, Dead Living Zombies, which is a zombie B-movie edition, and Lost on Mars, which takes you, obviously, to Mars to fight Martian arachnids. On top of that, Ubisoft announced that Far Cry 3 Classic Edition is going to be releasing on consoles later this summer. And not only will it be included for free if you bought the Far Cry 5 season pass and got all that other shit, but you'll get it a month earlier as well.
Damn.
So that, I think that is pretty awesome.
Not bad, but no fucking trials announcement yet. Come on.
You ain't getting another trial.
Yes, we are. What the hell does Red Links do otherwise besides trials? Come on.
Maybe they're making a new game. Maybe they want to make a point-and-click word game. Do you ever think of that? Man. Maybe that's their life goal. Eternal. Maybe Trials is just funding something.
You'll have to go through the Trials series on TA and
Trials Fusion, the Telltale game series.
Telltale. Welcome to the story.
There was one more thing. Henry Jones brought it up before. He wants to know, he says he's involved in a private Google group with some people who tried to crowdfund, Sweary, his new game, The Good Life. They tried crowdfunding it a while ago and it like went to shit and it just never happened. But it looks like they're going to try doing it again March 26th. So what do you guys think of that whole thing?
I mean, D4 seemed pretty cool and weird. I never played a Sweary game before that, but I wouldn't mind.
I'm not familiar with this.
Didn't he also, we were just talking about Deadly Premonition, didn't he work on that as well?
I believe so. I think that's his, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he has really weird, odd, interesting games. I'm sure Eternal would love it.
Probably. If I could play anything other than a walking sim, I would probably be inclined to try it.
Yeah, and the game, it was, I think it first went on Fig. It wasn't on Kickstarter the first time around.
What the fuck is Fig?
I have no idea.
Fig is another crowdfunding site that was created by, like, I think people at like Double Fine and Harmonic, just a couple of different indie companies. They all just went and did it together. And I don't know. It's just another crowdfunding company.
Wait, Dark Mika in chat actually said D4 is only PS. No, it's not. It's on Xbox One.
It's an Xbox game.
Yeah, it was a game with gold, nonetheless.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a game with gold, and I know I've even got it, but I just never it's another one of those that just sits in my ready to install, and I haven't never touched it.
I didn't really follow the whole Sweary, the Good Life game too much. I know a lot of people, when it was first announced, were like, why aren't you doing this platform? Why aren't you doing this platform? Why don't you? It was, I think they were focusing on like Steam and PS4 only. So, of course, like the most crowded platforms they want to go for. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I didn't think it was going to get funded. It didn't get funded. I think they just canceled it because it wasn't going well. I don't know. Yeah. If they announce it's coming to Xbox and it looks decent, maybe I'll give it a look, but I kind of gave up on the whole crowdfunding stuff for the most part, especially for established people.
Yeah, that's the thing where you draw the line. It's like, why do they need the money? You know, Harmonix and what was the other one? It was
Double Fine.
Oh, yeah, they're a big indie company or whatever.
Well, Double Fine, they did it with, you know, they did Broken Age and they made their money to do that. Harmonix was trying to crowdfund a PC version of Rock Band.
Wow.
And the big thing there would have been that they would have brought back Rock Band Network as well and had a brand new Rock Band Network because they could make it work on Steam. There's some other news. Rock Band Network is going away this month. No one knows the date. No one knows when. But if there's ever any songs you wanted from Rock Band Network, you better fucking buy them now because they're going away for good.
Yeah, Joe, you told me your wallet was not loving you this week.
I think total I bought like 27 songs last night. Like $50, something like that.
I know you're a hardcore Rock Band fan though, so it's
very much. I very much am. And the worst part is, like, the Rock Band Network stuff isn't playable in Rock Band 4. So the only way I'll be able to play the songs is on my 360.
Oh.
But, you know, at least I'll be able to play them.
Yeah.
It's just a bummer. I hate that Microsoft pretty much abandoned the XNA framework, because that's what the Xbox Live Indie Game stuff was on. Those are all gone. That's what Rock Band Network was created on. Those are all going away. And, like, even how many developers bailed on the Xbox to jump to PlayStation because they developed in XNA and the Xbox One, you know, from Microsoft, who made XNA, didn't support it, but the PS4 did. How fucked up is that?
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know. But that's the news I got. So, Carnage, I guess if you want, you can head out.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, and I guess I'll leave with a bad pun. No, I'm all out. I'll just say Doritos.
Okay. Make it easy, Carnage.
Thanks. See you guys later.
Nice.
Oh, man. All right. Before we jump to reviews, we do have one more thing to take care of, and that is a giveaway. We have codes for Starpoint Gemini Warlords to give away. Zeno from LGM Games was on the last episode. And, you know, we got some codes to give out. And we asked you on Twitter to send us an email telling us why you want Starpoint Gemini Warlords. We got 6 emails to go through. So let's start with the first one from Talos167, who says, I like space. 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 Space! I'm sold. Awesome. Number 2 is from Jack, who says, hi, I would like to win a copy of this game because it is a long time ago since I played some space game. Back in the days, I loved playing games like Wing Commander, X-Wing, Privateer, X-13, Free Space, Masters of Orion 2. I think the Starpoint Gemini Warlords game would fit right into this list, and I would like it a lot. Now I just hope to win. Greetings from Germany, Oliver. Thanks for the email, Jack. Let us move on. Next one from Robert M., who says, hi ho. I like those science fiction games and love to play it. Thanks for the chance and your great work. Love to see more. Best regards, Robert. Next email is from John Harvey, who says, me, Joe, over here, me, I'd like a copy, please. Anything sci-fi tends to catch my attention, and this one sounds cool as fuck. Exploring, trading, mining, hunting bounties, and controlling a whole host of different ships? Well, color me interested. I've always wanted to roleplay as a Captain Kirk wannabe, going boldly and searching for green skin alien women to kiss. Then, When I became knowledgeable enough, when I became powerful enough, it will begin the age of conquest. I will raise a powerful fleet and subjugate the universe. All will bow before the magnificence of Star Emperor John, first of his name. They will tremble as my interstellar armada arrives in their puny star system. They will be bent to my will and their cultural distinctiveness blended into my empire. All hail the Star Emperor. All hail the Empire. So, in short, I think I may have an undiagnosed megalomaniac tendency. This game might help keep them in check for a while, saving me from, I don't know, attempting a government takeover or a military coup or some shit like that. So you'd actually be providing a public service if you think about it. P.S. Did you check out the SpaceX launch and landing? How cool was that? Seeing both booster rockets land simultaneously was truly inspiring. It's an amazing feat of human engineering. Truly looked like movie footage. They landed so perfectly and so synchronized. Hopefully they continue to advance like this. That manned Mars mission is looking more and more feasible all the time. Might be possible that we'll all be alive when humans step foot on another planet. Really makes you think. Thanks for the chance and good luck, everyone. So thanks, John. Next one from Oroto Demato, because of course Oroto has to get an entry in here. Space, the final frontier. Ah, yes, Mr. SML man. I do like me some space, metaphorically speaking and literally speaking. Like when I decided to donate blood, I was sweating balls, nervous and anxious. And then there were all these nurses around me as I was getting my blood taken. I screamed, I need some space, guys. I'm going to die. They all laughed. I like being alone sometimes, and if I could be alone in space, even better. This game has a calming charm to it. Soundtrack also makes for a chill adventure, unless I'm in a battle, that is, no time for chillin' there, unless you're a psychopathic murderer. And let's not be shy about it here. Xbox lacks games like this. There will never be enough of them, so we need to support the ones we can. Show the makers there are people who care about the genre, the gameplay format, and they're not only on PC. Thank you for porting the game to console. Final email from John Prudlow, who says, Dear SML Podcast, this game looks amazing. The 4K graphics are slick and the new ships look incredible. I'm a big fan of space sims and RPGs. First games that really had me hooked on gaming were anything Star Wars on the PC in the early 90s. From there, I wanted to travel to every galaxy, fictional or otherwise, in as realistic a setting as possible. I'd love to get my hands on this game and spend countless hours in conquest mode on my Xbox. Thank you for your consideration and a chance for a copy of the game. You may have noticed that I didn't, you know, scribble down who said what, because we got six emails and six codes, so everybody's getting a copy.
You get a code, everybody gets a code.
I love when it works out perfectly like that. Six people.
I noticed in the beginning you were like, you didn't say how many we had to choose, and I thought, oh,
there's a reason. Carnage in chat. Joe is Oprah. He left so that he could go and chat.
Yeah.
Carnage is, and he's not even in the Twitch chat, so I could get my average three viewers. I need people in the Twitches. People bitched I wasn't on Twitch. I'm back on Twitch. I need my average three viewers so I could get the whole affiliation.
We need to support the show.
I want your bits and I want your subs. Don't make me start a Patreon and then I'll put like what you get for being a Patreon, and the fucking reward will just nothing. Say ripped off. But yeah, congrats to everyone who emailed us. You're all getting copies of Starpoint Gemini. Good stuff. Well, we do have some reviews to take care of, and this is where we would normally jump into them. But we're going to some other people first, so take it away, me and other people. All right, first game to talk about tonight is called Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth Hacker's Memory, developed by MediaVision, published by Bandai Namco, released January 19th on the PS4 for $59.99. Set in the near future, the line between real and digital worlds is blurred, and logging into cyberspace is a part of everyday life. In the shadows lurk hackers utilizing computer viruses called Digimon to commit mischief and crimes. Framed and accused of wrongdoings, Keisuke Amazawa, I hope I said that right, has no choice but to dive into the digital world to not only clear his name, prove his innocence, but to protect his loved ones. We got someone new on the show to talk about this one. Adam McLaren, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great today, Joe.
Just great, that's it?
I just came back from a swim, had a moment there where I couldn't decide if I was going to nap or not. decided to try and tough it out.
That's been my entire week. Do I want to nap or not?
Yeah, I feel like I'm hitting that age where everything comes down to whether I'm going to nap or not.
You just yell everyone to get off your lawn.
Pretty much, man. Pretty much.
So tell me, what is Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth Hacker's Memory?
So it's really hard to talk about this game without bringing up the first one. So this is actually a sequel slash prequel to the original Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth. And essentially, it kind of came out of left field. They've had a pretty tough run with Digimon games, and they finally said, we're going to put the money in and really do one. And so that was Cyber Sleuth, which was very similar. I believe this one is built on the exact same engine. I would bet money on it. And essentially, the first one was this story where Digimon are these weird AI things that popped up in this other world fantasy thing where it's, I'm kind of stumbling here. It's
first time jitters. I know how it is.
Yeah. It's one of those, you know, you put on the headset, you go into the other world, and it's a big hub where everybody interacts. And then, you know, hackers are played up as this crazy thing. And then it turns out you learn along the way that these hackers are actually using Digimon, which are just AI. And then the events of the first game happen. And this is technically a prequel, but it's more of like a side story where essentially this guy gets swept up in something bigger than him. And what I really love about these games is that the story is only part of the draw, because it's actually a very character-driven adventure where you're playing this person. He essentially, in this world, you can't use an avatar that doesn't look like yourself. And so when your account gets hacked and you have to use something different, people think you're either a hacker or someone who's up to no good, because they would constantly flip through these different avatars. And so your poor guy is essentially, he gets hacked, he loses his thing, and now nobody will trust him, nobody wants anything to do with him, other than like his best friend. And he ends up getting swept up in these events, and he decides to start, you know, helping people. And so you kind of go around Japan, you help people solve their problems as you're trying to suss out the mystery of who this person was and, you know, try and get back onto them.
So basically, someone hacks you, and now people think you're the hacker.
Yeah, exactly. Essentially, he steals your identity, and so he has to create a new account, and now everybody thinks that, you know, he's a bad dude, and nobody wants to, you know, interact with him. And so he has this, you know, of course, life is so intertwined with the internet now. It's, you take it the next step further, and everybody goes in this hub world, and they look at him, and he's just scum, essentially.
Interesting. So yeah. What's the gameplay like? Just fairly traditional RPG here?
Yeah, it's a turn-based game. Uses, you know, I don't want to say Pokemon style, because that seems just awful. But you know, types and advantages and disadvantages, and you essentially make a party of three Digimon, and you know it's turn-based style combat where you can scan Digimon every time you fight them, and then eventually you can use the scan to create your own, and then you digivolve and de-digivolve them to essentially move forward. One of the gripes I actually had with the first game is that a lot of the very popular, you know, more known Digimon that, you know, everybody goes into the game and they're like, I want to get that one. They actually lock them off through quests that you can only finish at the end of the game. Like if you're pretty driven, you know, by about the halfway point, you can max out a Digimon. And so in the first one, it was a big problem where you would get, you know, you would raise up these Digimon that you really, really enjoy. And you would essentially hit a point where you have everything you need to Digivolve into the Digimon you want, but then you just can't because they've arbitrarily locked it behind an endgame quest. And so I was actually really disappointed to see that they actually brought that into this game too, where there are still Digimon that they just lock off near the end of the game, which I think was a really silly choice. But I think it's more to do with the fact that, like I said, I'm pretty sure they just ran it on the same engine. And it kind of feels more like, you know, a 1.5 to the story as opposed to a 2.0.
Gotcha. So people who played the first game, they're pretty much going to know how everything works, and they'll be at ease with the game.
Yeah. It's absolutely, you know, if you played the first one, you can jump in. I had this moment. So really funny story here. So it actually lets you import your save from the first game. And my I had to stop and take a good 10 minutes to scour the internet to find out if I could name my character. Because you can name the character in the first game, you can name your character in the second game. And I didn't want to name my character the same thing in the second game if my first character showed up, because it is a prequel. And if they took my save and kept the name, I didn't want to feel like an idiot. And it turns out that no, they bring your save over and they could have had your character from the first game keep his name, but they just don't for some reason. And I thought that was a bit of a missed opportunity.
Interesting.
But, as soon as you get to the title screen, like the theme from the original game starts playing, but it's a bit remixed and it really feels good. Like, you know, I think anybody who bought the first one and was looking at this, they're probably going to buy this one too. And you get into it and you know right away what you're getting into, and it's good.
Nice. What about people new to the series? Like, if I've never played the first one, or if I don't even know what Digimon is this worth me looking into?
It's a bit of a tough sell, but they do a good job of kind of taking the story away from, you know, the TV series and all that. Like, they don't try and force it. They create their own thing. It's its own story. And if you know nothing about Digimon, you probably could go into this game and play it and be totally fine, and you would never realize that it's a franchise. Like, they do a good job of separating that. So, you know, if you jump in, you're not going to be totally lost. You might have a little bit of a hard time figuring a couple of the things out, because it kind of expects you to know, like, for someone like me, you know, I look at the menu and I know exactly who's going to digivolve into what my choices are for the most part. You know, I think there's been a couple, especially in this game, they added a whole bunch of new ones that are from some of the newer series that I didn't know. But, you know, even going in blind, you're not really losing out on anything. So I think if you're interested, it's not too bad to jump into it.
That's good to hear. So overall, $60 for this game. I know you had some gripes with the first one, especially with the ending. Did you have the same kind of gripes with this one, or did they smooth that out for the asking price?
So I'm not totally to the end yet, but I think this one has kind of my big gripe with the first one was that kind of on the way through the game, it's this, you know, it's a mystery, you're following it through, it's very character driven, you're focused on a set of characters, and then right near the end of the game, a lot of the focus gets pulled into a second set of characters. And this one, it seems to be a bit more focused on the main character's problem and his own story, but they definitely do shift a bit to the characters from the first one. But for me, I was kind of like, that's okay, because at least, you know, as a connected story, I still care about those characters, so it's been a little easier. And so I think it's a bit better on that side. If I was going to recommend whether someone was going to jump into this series as a whole, I think the first one is actually on for $20 right now, the last time I checked. And I would definitely say, if you're going to start with this series, start with the first one, because this game is really, really made for people who've come out of the first one. I definitely wouldn't say start with this one.
Gotcha. So people who played the first one, $60, what is your verdict?
Absolutely. Give it a try. Pick it up. It's a good game. If you like the first one, you're definitely going to like this one.
All right. Sounds good. So if you like the first one, grab this one. If you haven't played the first one, fucking pick up the first one.
It's $20.
Only $20.
It's like an 80-hour game for $20. That's a steal, man.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, Adam, thank you so much for not only chatting with me about this game, but for joining the show for the first time. Did you have fun?
I did have fun, Joe. Hopefully I'll be back on the show at some point again.
Fingers crossed. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it all up?
No, I'm just very satisfied. I was, you know, a bit worried coming into this one, but it was a really good game.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Pillars of the Earth, Book 2, Sowing the Wind, developed and published by Daedalic Entertainment. Book 2 released December 13th as a free update on Steam for people who bought the game. Just came out at the end of January for consoles, with Book 3 planned for May. Full game is $39.99 on console, $29.99 on Steam, and that does include both books as well as the upcoming third one. Times are dire for Ilina, Jack, and Philip, who find their country torn by war. Malevolent forces strive to destroy our heroes' lives and efforts. Your choices matter and decide their fates. Time to open the book again and continue with The Pillars of the Earth, Book 2. Dark Mika covered this one, sent in her review, and this is what she has to say. Ken Follett's The Pillars of the Earth, Book 2, Sowing the Wind, is the second of three parts in this point-and-click choose-your-own-story game based on the books by the same name. The parts are all attached together in one single game, so once you buy the game, you have access to each part as it releases. Point-and-click style is very simple. There's no mixing items, no convoluted solutions. It's all based in reality. The reality is that of 12th century Europe. Most of the game is just walking around looking at things to get thoughts from the characters, occasionally using items on things, to use all the knowledge you've gained while playing to choose the options when interacting with people. Almost all these choices matter, and they are remembered between the first and second book, and will likely be remembered for the third book as well. These choices matter because many come with consequences later in the game or even in other books. Consequences range from simple, where some people just don't like you anymore and interact with you negatively if they're willing to at all, to being extremely dire by having the possibility of characters die off. You play as various characters throughout the game: Tom, a master builder who wants to work on cathedrals, Jack, a boy from the wilds, Philip, a monk working as a prior, and a young woman named Eileena. Each character has their own items, views, and interactions with others. Everyone in life has their own story, their own role, their own life, and this is no different in this game. Gives the game more of a raw feeling because everyone has their own problems and setbacks they have to deal with, personal tortures and sadness. Oh yeah, the game isn't cheery, in case you haven't figured that out yet. Game does have its high moments, but it's about perseverance in the face of cruelty and injustice and learning from one's mistakes. To do that, you have to make mistakes, and there has to be cruelty and injustice. So yeah, the game is not one that says, I'm a hero, everyone shall fear me. No, 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 this is more of a, let me try to make things a little less fucked up. Just a little. Please. Because you flip between people, you often see the other characters you play as. You get to see them from everyone else's eyes. Often you see them as great people, but sometimes because of who you're playing as, they're a massive dick. This update to the game improved the stability of the game a great deal. Saving works better. Before this update, the saving was finicky. Game could still use some improvements, as leaving the save menu back to the main game puts you through a loading screen for absolutely no reason, which is something it didn't used to do. It's not a big issue, just annoying as hell, but those were the only real issues I had in either of the first two parts. Art style looks hand-drawn as well. It's really pretty, and on that merit alone, I would suggest people buying it because it's just a really pretty game. Game has lots of vulgarities and violence, and deals with some pretty heavy shit though, so it's definitely not for kids. Lastly, this is 12th century Europe, as such it's highly religious, and the game doesn't shy away from that, including some bad things that went down back then because of religious political alliances. Costs $40 on console, $30 on Steam, and honestly, the game is already worth it with just the two books in it, which will last you a good 16 to 20 hours, and you'll get the third part as well when it comes out for no additional cost, so I think it's worth it. The art is gorgeous, the story is enthralling, though it is a bit dry at times. The characters are interesting, so I think this is for all older teens or adults and definitely worth checking out. Thank you, Dark Mika. Good stuff. All right, next game to talk about is called Mad Carnage, developed by Dragius Games, published by Cubic Games. It released February 2nd on the Switch for $4.99. In the world after the Great War, you will take control of intimidating petrol beasts, each with their own unique weapons and gameplay mechanics. Can you survive the mad carnage? Answering that question, our good friend Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, good, good. I'm good.
How's it going?
It's going all right. It's an all right week so far, so good. It's been taking a long time to get to Friday.
It really has. Today,
but you know, it's coming along.
It's kind
of
good
games to play. Lots of stuff coming out. Already a busy year.
It really is. Like, there's too much shit coming out right now.
Yeah, it's like, you know, with Dragon Ball and Monster Hunter dropping the same day, and I rented them on succeeding weekends, so I checked both those games out, and yeah, a bunch of indie stuff already. It's like I already started building this list of games I got to check out for this year. And it's like this is when I like to play old stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, and I got Shadow of the Colossus Tuesday. That's right.
I forgot about that. Started
replaying that. It's probably bad when it's like I was looking at this year and like in the first 6 months, the things I really wanted to play are all fucking remakes. It's like Shadow of the Colossus and Secret of Mana and Dark Souls and Bayonetta. Well, Bayonetta is just a re-release, but yeah.
I'm still not sold on that Secret of Mana art style. I think it looks like garbage.
I'm not sold on it yet. I have not pre-ordered anything. I'd prefer to see it come to Switch, so I'm not in a rush to pick that one up.
I have my Super Nintendo Classic and Secret of Mana's on there, so I'm good.
I also didn't really like Secret of Mana that much. So. There's like layers here.
So you're looking forward to a game you never cared about.
I mean, you know, it might be better. I've always wanted to like it. You know, a lot of people really love that game.
A game you were never a fan of, but now it looks shittier.
It didn't come around, yeah. Whatever.
That's anyway.
A conversation for another time, perhaps.
How's Mad Carnage?
Mad Carnage makes me so mad. Oh, my God.
What is the game?
This is a post-apocalyptic. It's like it's a Mad Max-themed tactics RPG, basically, in that, yeah, you're in a Mad Max post-apocalyptic wasteland type world. Your units are cars with guns. You fight on these kind of barren wasteland things. There's like raiders that attack you with their I want to call them ships for some reason, with their cars, and you do battle and the last side standing wins. So this game has an interesting take on movement.
Okay.
Sorry, I took a sip of my drink there.
I thought it was a dramatic pause. Yeah.
So you got cars, right? As opposed to most tactics games where you have people, I guess. I mean, Advance Wars, they're tanks and shit. They're vehicles. Anyway, you have cars in this game. So what they're going for. So it's like you got your car, and let's say your car can move anywhere from 1 to 3 spaces from. And it can only move forward, like or kind of in like this little cone. Like it can't move 3 spaces in any direction, because if you want to start going around in the other direction, you have to like move, say, like a square to your right if you're going to turn and do a 180. Like think about how fun making 3-point turns is in real life. And it's not that fun. And so if your car is headed in one direction and you want to turn and go in the opposite direction, it's going to take you 2 turns to do that.
Like you're going to sit there
and you have to do a shallow turn to turn around and go in the other direction, because what they're trying to simulate is they're trying to do something with you having to strategize around the momentum of your vehicle. I get it. So it's like if you move your car, say, 3 spaces at the opposite end of the spectrum. So if you move like 1 space, you have kind of, let's say, more of tighter variety of movement options on your next turn, because you can make that 180 turn and get around. If you move like 3 spaces, you then are going to have momentum on your next turn, and you won't be able to move just 1 space. You will have to move at least 2 spaces, and if you move like multiple spaces, multiple turns in a row, it becomes very difficult to then turn your vehicle. Which can lead to things like you just crashing into fucking walls because you have no choice, or crashing into enemy cars because you have no choice, or even crashing into your own cars and destroying them.
Oh my God.
You don't have a choice. And it's like, part of that is, you know, part of that you look at, you're like, well, fuck you. You made some bad decisions. You maneuvered your car into this, you know, you drove too fast or whatever. And you got yourself into the situation. But the situation sucks, and it is no fun to get in that situation. But also, it's like, you also can't move on your, or you can't not move on your turn. So it's like, if you have one of your other cars, say, like, pull up right in front of one of your cars to take a shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
The car behind it still has to move, and it might have to move through that car's space, which will destroy that car.
Oh God.
This isn't like this happened several times over the course of when I was playing. It just like, I'd get myself into these situations, and it was just so frustrating because, your car, when it shoots, it has like a cone that it can shoot with, and it has to be kind of in the front of the car. So you could have an enemy that's like off to your left a little bit, but if you can't turn your car just so to the left, that car might be just out of your range. But your other car over here that's already facing that direction can zoom up and shoot it. But it's like, do you move this car first? Maybe it can't move. I don't know. Maybe it already moved. And it's such a pain in the ass just moving around in this game. Like, at its heart, like, it's pretty, you know, it's a $5 game. You know, it's a pretty basic tactic stuff. There's not a huge variety of units at your disposal. Like, you have your basic car. You have a armored car, which that car just has to run into other cars. That's what that car does. It doesn't have guns. and you get like a heavy vehicle, which has guns on either side of it. And so there's only three unit types. You do get upgrades. You get cogs after every mission, which you can then use to you can assign around across your different units to get some upgrades, which is fine. But it's just like the first non-tutorial mission, I was so frustrated trying to figure out like the movement, and it's coupled with the fact that like your base car only has two units of health, and when an enemy shoots you, you're basically dead. Like that car is blown up. Like it's one shot kills for the most part. Like the armored cars can take a couple shots. The bigger two gun ones can take a couple shots, but like your base card that you generally have the most of on any given mission, if you mess up with that thing once, it is poof off the map. Like there was one instance when one of my my heavy cars got, or it was one of the ones with two guns, not one of the rammy ones, and I thought it was out of the way of an enemy rocket. This is another interesting thing. There's rockets that you can shoot, but sometimes it takes more than one turn to hit its target, so you either have to lead it or hit your target on the first turn. Either way, I thought my heavy two-gun car was out of the way, but apparently it wasn't, and the rocket hit it, and then boom, one of my three cars that I had on that mission was gone.
Oh, man. So
it's like, if you lose, like, one vehicle, you're basically fucked, and you need to restart the mission, because it's just so hard, to maneuver around, like, one car to try to wipe an enemy team, and just kind of impossible in some situations. Like, I would kind of have a mission that would be really frustrating. I have a lot of trouble getting through it. It becomes a thing where you have to sit there and replay missions over and over again, trying to figure out precisely how to move your cars. Because if you move them too far, then the enemy cars will drive up and shoot you. This is a problem in a lot of tactics games when you have a lot of ranged weaponry where you kind of have to inch at each other.
Yeah.
Because if you get within the enemy's range first, they're going to shoot you. But usually there's more variety to back that up. Like there's melee units, there's things you can do defensively to try to avoid that. But in this case, no, it's just like, because it's all ranged except for those armored rammy cars, you gotta like sit there and either inch forward, but it's hard to inch forward because you can't not move your car sometimes. So sometimes you just have to move your car forward where it's gonna get shot. And it's just so frustrating. It's so frustrating sometimes. Well, all the time.
It sounds like they're at least trying something different with the turning and the momentum and all of that, but it doesn't sound like it's really working.
Actually fun. Yeah, that's the problem. Like, I can see what they're going for. It's a unique system, but it doesn't actually enable fun when it gets right down to it, and that's the problem. Like, at $5, I was like, oh man, come on. Like, if it's just like a passable amount of fun, like that's decent for that price. But it's just like, I was like, that first mission, I'm just like, I can't believe, like, I restarted it 7 times.
Wow.
To try to get through it. And then there was other missions where I just like, I'm like, oh my god, what is going on? I just don't understand. This is just not working for me. The game, you know, it's got a pretty basic look to it, nice, clean art style, like nothing too fancy, but it's serviceable. It's got a little story going on there. There's some nice some nice 2D art there as you're kind of going through the story. The music is okay, but man, playing it, woof.
Man, so is the $5 cheap enough to make this like a curious thing that, you know, like a fuck it, why not check it out kind of thing? Or is it just too different and too weird?
Well, just like someone might get to the first mission and then just be stuck like I was. Like if I, you know, wasn't reviewing this game and it was just in front of me for some reason, I would have stopped playing right then and there. Like it's just so frustrating. For all the, you know, the interesting ideas it brings to the table, it's just like, no, just no.
Do you think there's anything they could do to make it more approachable and enjoyable?
I think you need more maneuverability on the cars. Bottom line, it's just like, yeah, that's what really put me off and was just really frustrating. Just not being able to move the cars where I wanted to, or just like a little more leniency there, I think would go a long way.
Ah, that's a bummer to hear, but I guess they can't all be they can't all be winners, right?
They cannot all be winners.
Ah, boy. Well, Tim, thank you so much for checking this one out. Any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Nope. Mad Carnage. It'll make you mad.
All right, and we are back with us. Next game to talk about is called Shooty Fruity, developed by Near Light and End Dreams, published by End Dreams. It released January 19th on PlayStation VR for $19.99. previously on Steam for Vive and Oculus. Service with a smile and a shotgun. Scan, serve, and pack produce while shooting guns to defend your store from mutant fruit. Can you do your job as a sharpshooting shop clerk during the heat of combat? Take on new roles, unlock new weapons, and blow tons of fruit up in your juicy career. Scan, shoot, repeat. This is a really, really fucking cool game. This is a thing. it takes kind of a job simulator style approach of where you are either, you know, the one job has you scanning groceries in a grocery store. So they'll come down a lane and you just pick it up and you scan it and then you throw it down a chute. And while you're doing that, fruit is going to attack you and you have to grab guns that are just flying by you. So you'll just reach up and grab one and kill the mutant fruit while you're still scanning groceries. It is ridiculously cool to multitask of scanning groceries and murdering fruit. And it works really, really well.
I feel like the developer this probably had like a teenage job where they were a cashier. And in their head, they just imagined the shitty customers coming in like mutant fruit.
Didn't we all have shitty jobs, though, doing that?
I didn't. I wasn't allowed to work.
Oh, well, okay, weirdo.
Yeah.
Anyway, as you complete stages, each stage has three different goals that you could accomplish. One is, you know, there's going to be things like survive with having this much life at the end, or earn this much juice, which is your currency, earn this much juice in a level, or earn this much juice in a certain amount of time. And, you know, those are your three stars for the levels. So, of course, you're trying to get all the stars in each level. In between stages, you pretty much go back to a break room, and they have a vending machine where you can get new guns and weapons. They have a high score area so you can compare your score with other people. It's just a really, really solid VR shooter with a fun twist. Having the whole, you know, the shopping, either, you know, scanning groceries or like putting together a food tray, stuff like that. It just keeps you on your toes because you have to make sure that you're doing that as well as keeping an eye out all around you to see if there's any, you know, mutant cherries or apples or oranges or a giant fucking watermelon rolling down the aisle at you. It's ridiculous and it works really, really well. $20, it is a little bit on the high side. I still think it's worth it. I give it a very recommended try it. I think the only thing holding it back for some people might be the price, but again, it's VR, so there's always a VR tax. $20, though, I think if you're looking for a fun VR shooter with a fun twist, it is ridiculous, it is funny, and the tracking worked really well for the most part. I really, really enjoyed it, and I think it's worth picking up.
Awesome.
Next game is called Pinstripe, developed and published by Armor Games. It released February 7th on Xbox One. It'll be out February 13th on PS4 for $14.99. Play as Teddy, an estranged ex-minister forced to venture through the frozen afterlife in search of Bo, his 3-year-old daughter, and her perverse kidnapper. Discover the dark secrets of Teddy's past and confront his sleazy, demonic nemesis, Mr. Pinstripe. Take part in an emotional adventure through the afterlife that blends humor with horror for a memorable experience. Cole, tell me about Pinstripe.
So the summary pretty much nails this game as a whole. You're like, you're reading it off and I'm looking at my notes going, that's all the same shit I had wrote down. but it is a very narrative heavy 2D puzzle adventure type game. You do play as a priest named Teddy, and in the very beginning, him and his daughter Bo are on a train to hell, and the train crashes. And from there, Bo is abducted by Mr. Pinstripe, and it is up to Teddy to figure out how to stop Mr. Pinstripe from adopting Bo and taking her away forever. So in order to do this, players will move through the world just uncovering clues and solving little puzzles. there are some collectibles that you will find in the world that kind of fills in the backstory a bit. And that's how you come to understand just how a priest and his you know, small child of a daughter wind up in hell, you know? because that's kind of like, that's your whole thing in the beginning is like, he's a priest and she's a tiny little kid. The fuck could they have done to get to hell? So if you play through the game and you pay attention, you're actually looking through and scrounging up the few collectibles that there are, it lays it out there for you. There are two different dialogue trees that you can use during the game when you encounter different characters, and this is where the humor comes into play, because some of these characters, they're either really, really sweet or really weird and shitty. And how you respond to them affects how they respond back to you, obviously, but also can, not on a large scale, alter the game, but it can kind of shift the ending a small degree, depending on whether you decide to be nice or whether you decide to be a jerk. You can't choose, you know, good or bad for every interaction, but there are some key that you get to choose between. And there are achievements tied to, you know, whether you're good or whether you're an asshole, which could be a good description for how the priest gets to hell. You may have been an asshole. There are, speaking of the achievements, by the way, there are two unobtainables. There's something glitched where if you do the jerk playthrough, you're gonna be a jerk for no good reason, and the achievement's a jerk and doesn't pop. So another one is that there is a speed run, and this builds up to the fact that the campaign is really short. It's a wonderful narrative and emotional experience, but you can be done with it, and I would say even without using a guide or anything, you're going to finish it in about an hour and a half. And even with a guide, you're probably going to push right at an hour. There's an achievement for beating it in less than an hour. And I think that's supposed to be one of the other unobtainables. I didn't even try to get through the game in under an hour, because I was really going for the whole, I wanted to poke through. There are a few secrets, and there's a few little hidden areas you can get to and different things that you can buy. And I wanted to do all that instead of just like try to book it from A to B. There's also the challenge of trying to beat it without taking any damage and what have you. So there's some replay there if you're really, you know, wanting to push yourself with the game and not pay such close attention to the narrative so much as just seeing how fast you can bust through the puzzles.
I was going to say, given it's short, it does at least have some replayability to it.
Yeah, if you're into the whole speedrun thing, that's where your replay is going to come from. Though you do, if you really want to experience everything in the game, you have to do at least two playthroughs anyway. Because there are some hidden areas that are locked behind a gold key, and you can't get the gold key until you complete your first playthrough. So if you want to experience everything anyway, you're already signed up for that second playthrough, you know, come hell or high water anyhow.
It's a gorgeous looking game. I love the visuals in it.
It has a very Tim Burton, you know, aesthetic to it. You can tell it was obviously very heavily inspired by that kind of work. Think of almost like the Corpse Bride kind of is what it reminded me of the most as far as like character design and stuff goes. But it's incredibly emotional. I wanted to play through the story and just focus on like the story itself the first time through. And I felt that it was just something that kind of drew you in if you were just really taking your time and looking through everything. And that's definitely how I recommend you do the first playthrough anyway.
I guess the question is then, for $15, what do you think of Pinstripe?
This is a definite buy. I do worry that the price, when I keep repeating that it's a short campaign and it can be done in an hour, but the experience itself is worth it. And the puzzles are incredibly intuitive, and I felt comfortable playing. Like, I never looked at the puzzles in front of me and was like, what the fuck do I do? It was instant. And that's kind of rare these days, because everybody wants to try to make puzzles that have you run in 75 different places and really have to, you know, choke your time into it. And it's kind of a forced, you know, way to pad the game. But they didn't try to do that here. They just accepted that it was, you know, the time and length that it was. And
they were confident in the quality of experience that they didn't feel that they needed to pad it out.
That's a fantastic way to put it. Thank you, Joe. But it's true.
I should host the podcast.
You should. Maybe do some reviews.
Fuck that. Too much work. Yeah, it looks really cool, though. I want to pick this up myself. It looks really, really awesome, and I'm happy to hear that even a short length of the campaign doesn't detract from the overall experience, and it's still worth the money.
I think it definitely falls into a quality over quantity here. Like, you don't need it to be a long, lengthy experience, because what's there is so fleshed out and well done.
Which I would gladly take that over, you know, a $60 game that just has endless bullshit quests that you don't care about.
Yeah, you and me both.
Good stuff. Well, next game to talk about is called Out of Ammo, developed by Rocketworks, published by Zen Studios. It released January 30th, again on PlayStation VR for $14.99. Out of Ammo is an intense virtual reality strategy game that puts you in the commander's seat against wave after wave of soldiers as you move around the battlefield to build defenses and issue orders. You can even directly possess your units to directly engage the enemy, making use of cover and preparing your magazines carefully so you don't run out of ammo. This is a mix between a VR shooter, a VR tower defense game, and manually loading guns. It is very interesting. Visual style has a very cartoonish, blocky-ish, I don't want to say Minecraft because it's not the full-on like 3D block style visuals, but it has a very cartoonish, blocky look to it. The way it starts out is you have to build your camp, and you can put like sandbag bunkers, you can put machine gun turrets, you could build sniper towers. They'll give you all of these different things, and you have to position your troops, you have to build these, you have to station your troops. There's a lot of management and micromanagement in this game. Once you have your troops laid out, enemies will start coming in from all different directions. It's not just like, hey, there's a single path. They're gonna come down. A lot of different paths, a lot of different ways they could get at you. You gotta be on your feet a lot. The soldiers, for the most part, the AI is decent enough that they'll kill the enemies, but they're not gonna be the greatest. They're gonna do what they can. But a lot of the game comes down to you personally going in and, I guess, possessing these different soldiers who are manning these different stations, whether you're on a sniper rifle, where they have a flamethrower. They have all these weird ass cool weapons in the game that you can mess with. And then the other twist is that the whole reloading thing is easily the most interesting and unique part of the game. And that when you run out of ammo in a rifle, you know, in most games, you hit a button and it reloads.
Yeah.
Not in this one. In this one, let's go with the rifle, for example. You have to reach forward, grab the clip out of the rifle, pull it out, and get rid of it. Then you have to reach on your belt, grab a new clip, pop it in. You go with a shotgun, you take a shot, you got to reach up and, you know, pull the pump gate, the whole pump handle, and reload the shotgun that way. If you're doing a sniper rifle, you take your shot, and then you have to grab the lever, pull back the chamber, have the bullet pop out, reach onto yourself, grab a new single bullet, put it into the sniper rifle, close the chamber, and then aim and shoot again. Like, the big thing here is a lot of manual reloading and stuff.
Yeah.
Even like the stationary machine guns, once you run out of your strip of bullets, you have to, you know, pull the handles back, lift the top up, put the new ammo I don't know, string, whatever the fuck they are, put the new ammo bullet chain in there, close the thing, push the handles back for it. Is a really, really cool, unique way to keep you involved instead of just shoot, 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 move here, shoot, 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 move here. My biggest issue is I don't know if it's my setup. I don't know, because I've always had gripes with the tracking on PlayStation VR. It's, you know, it's a cool piece of technology that is using a shitty $60 camera and fucking 10-year-old Move controllers. And it's just not as precise as it needs to be. There's a lot of times where I'm reaching to try and do stuff and like my hand, my in-game hand just isn't doing what I want it to do. There's a lot of times where I would go into, you know, like I'll go into a sniper tower and I'll take out some guys and then I'll leave. And it's like the camera lost where I was. And instead of being, you know, hovering over the camp and what I need to do, I'm like on top of everything. But I can't really do what I need to do because I can't see anything. I spent way too much readjusting the camera, moving my positioning, everything else. And when you have waves of enemies coming at you, you don't have time to fuck around with resetting your camera constantly. Again, yeah. I don't know if it's an issue with the game or if it's just the limitations of PlayStation VR, but it's, for me, it was a very, very difficult experience trying to get everything working right. When it worked right and everything was going well, it was a fun game. Just too often, it felt like I was fighting the game instead of fighting the enemies. $15, it's cheap enough that it's worth taking a look at. If you're looking for a new unique twist on tower defense and VR shooting games, if you have any experience where you're playing PSVR games and you feel like it's not tracking you properly or you're having issues with juddery cameras and whatever else, you might want to avoid this one just because you'll probably run into a lot of problems with it. Overall, though, I'd give a try. It's cool. It's interesting. I enjoy the fact that they do different stuff with the whole reloading and positioning and everything else. Just the tracking is my gripe, and it's a rough one.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it's gonna happen, though. Oh, well. Next game is called Overdriven Reloaded Special Edition, developed and published by the One Man Army Game Studio. Released February 9th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $7.99. The HD shoot 'em up, vertical, fast, and fun. Relive the pleasures of arcade shoot 'em ups in plenty of game modes from 1 to 4 players in local co-op. Destroy huge bosses and dodge thousands of bullets. It is time to save the universe one more time. Cole, what'd you think of Overdriven Reloaded?
Overdriven is pretty cool. It's your pretty standard shmup. It is vertical scrolling though, which I tend to like the vertical scrolling a little better than the horizontal. I'm not sure why, but I think it's probably because I'm old and I remember like it Space Invaders and shit like that. So I tend to be more drawn to this kind of a shmup anyway. And your premise is that there are aliens and you need to shoot them. And that's pretty easy to roll with. There is a little bit of a twist though, in that your ship is color coordinated, and so are the aliens, the enemies that you're fighting. Their bullets are color coordinated too, so you need to change your ship's color to coincide with the bullets that are coming at you to lessen the amount of damage that you take. If you just try to go through the level and leave it on whatever color you start with default, you're kind of fucked. You won't make it very far. But if you pay attention to the colors that are coming at you and switch using Y so that the shield around your ship matches, at least try to match it to the colors that are coming at you the most, to lessen the amount of damage that you're going to take. It won't stop it from damaging you completely, but it lowers it a lot. Your ship has your standard, shmup style artillery, if you will, in that you start off with like 2 guns, and as you pick up power-ups and stuff, you'll have extra drones, or when you burst an enemy, they'll turn into stars. And you pick up 20 of those stars, you get an extra cannon on your ship. So you can have up to four, I think it is, up to four extra shots. And then there's the power-ups that allow for, like, shooting from the side, or you press B and have a special bomb that will wipe out all of the enemies and bullets associated with that color. So it's pretty standard for what you expect for a shmup in this regard, but it is very fast paced, and you can have up to four player local multiplayer with it. The multiplayer aspect, though, there are some instances where you have to maneuver through some pretty tight twists and turns in the map as like you're progressing. And if you're playing that with multiplayer and you're playing with somebody who doesn't understand the concept of personal space, you're going to kill each other a lot.
Nice.
And I'd like to say that because I played with my daughter and she killed me a lot. Like, she would just randomly push me into rocks and shit. And then, boom! And unfortunately, as most of these types of games are, if you die, then, you know, you lose whatever power-ups you had. You do get on the easier settings. There's four difficulties. Easy, normal, hard, and nightmare. So on the lower ones, you get like four lives to go into it with. There are extra modes in addition to the story mode. There's arcade, which is what you pretty much expect. You go through with just one life and, you know, pick up extra health as you go through, whatever, to stay alive longer. Then there's what's called a manic mode, where you cannot see your health bar. Oh, you have no idea how well that's going or not going for you. And then what's actually interesting is there's an extra mini game mode that is called Color Reflex. And for Color Reflex, it's kind of like, you know, other match three games like Bejeweled and stuff, but smashed in with a shmup. And this is where I had the most fun. Because you have to use the color button, you know, and change your color. Whatever you would shoot the obstacle, whatever color you were shooting with is what it would change to. So you were trying to get these combos to shoot out big, large sections so you could progress without, you know, taking damage or getting blown up. There were, I think there's four boards for the color reflex that you could play. There's also another mini game that's included called the LAN. And I can't tell you anything about it because I couldn't figure out how to unlock it. It's there, and it's an option, and I can click it, but nothing happens when I do. So I don't know what I did to break it, but I wasn't able to try that one out.
Nice.
Bonus points for this, it's an Xbox Play Anywhere title. We were just talking about those not too long ago and how it's got a pretty low adoption rate, but this is an Xbox Play Anywhere title.
Nice. I love seeing indie games be Play Anywhere titles.
Yeah. It's really neat because it's there's the added benefit for me. Like, my computer can't run a whole lot, but some of these indie games I can manage. And then I get so tickled when there's one that's A, it's Play Anywhere, and B, I can manage it. Especially when it's one that, like, I can play with my input monitor.
No.
It just makes life so much easier. Like, oh, click on that enemy and shoot it. Okay, now click on this one and shoot it.
Nice. Well,
I'm so good at games.
Well, overall, for $8 on Overdriven, what do you think of it?
I give it a buy it. It's a lot of fun. It's just, it's hard to be mad at it. It plays well, other than, you know, the tight areas where your co-op partner might smash you into rocks and kill you. It's pretty tolerable and fun. You can manage it. It's not genre breaking or anything, but it doesn't always have to be.
Sounds good. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Quantic Pinball, developed by Shine Games, published by Plug-In Digital, is out February 9th on Xbox One. I don't have an American price right now, but I know it's €3.99 British pounds, which I think translates to $5 or $6. So I'm going with $6 on this. It might be $5. I know it's $4 on Steam and $3 on mobile. So it's going to be cheap. We know that. Quantic Pinball is the perfect fusion between a pinball game and an arcade classic gameplay. Complete all the tables and test your skills with the special table and its Invaders Infinite Waves. Quantic Pinball is a very unique style of pinball. This is not trying to be Farsight and Pinball Arcade with, you know, realistic recreations of authentic pinball tables. This is not trying to be Pinball FX with its over-the-top, hyper-realistic, crazy tables. This feels a lot more like NES pinball. It's very stripped down, very basic, bright neon colors, trippy music, but it works, which is the most important part. There are 8 different tables, 7 or 8 different tables, I think. You start the very first one. Only the first one and the special one are unlocked at the beginning. And to open other tables, you need to, quote, complete the first table or the table that you're on. Once you hit a certain score threshold, there is a gate that opens up. And if you hit a ball through the gate, you complete the table and you move on to the next one. If you can't beat a table after you play one table, I think 10 times, the next one will open up so you can move on and stop sucking. Table layouts are very, very basic. There's no kind of crazy ramps and any kind of crazy shit like you'll see in the other games. It's just pathways and bumpers for the most part. There's areas that you can lock balls. There are usually 1 or 2 little cubbyhole areas that can start different activities, whether it'll throw like whirlpools on the table to throw balls in weird directions. They might have warp points where you'll hit a certain area and it'll just jump somewhere else. I think the craziest thing is that the pinball will go away and monsters, little tiny pink monsters, will just start coming at you down the pathways and use the bumpers to turn a gun and shoot them, which is the craziest this game gets. But
monsters make everything better.
I really do enjoy the simplicity of this, with so many over the top, hyper realistic, super in depth pinball tables out there. It's nice to see something that's just a lot more simple and more casual, and it's just very easy to pick up and play and move on. I do have a gripe. The second table that I played in there, it has 3 flippers, 1 on the left, 2 on the right. And the top one on the right is positioned in such a place that if you hit the bottom one, 99% of the time, the ball's just going to go up and hit the top flipper, which is just poor design on that table. The others, I haven't had any big gripes with. Everything seems to play well. Given the fact that this is only going to be $5 or $6, this is easily a fuck it, why not? It's fun, it's enjoyable, and it's cheap. So just get it. Fuck it. Get it.
Fuck it, why not?
Exactly. But that is it for this episode. Thanks again to Shang for coming on and chatting with us, to Kaforna Forge for being a fucking asshole for an hour with his puns. Fucking goddamn his puns.
And the interruptions.
Pretty much. And thanks again to everyone doing reviews tonight as well. Cole, do you have any final words to end the show?
Fucking no.
It's not your birthday. So
it's not my birthday.
You have to think now.
I can't. I'm too old and it's too late. I'm tired.
Final words. God damn you, Carnage. Thank you.
We'll be right back.